We know of new methods of attack. The Trojan horse. The fifth column.
Stop that, goddammit. It is one of the best films ever made. It's a near perfect movie. Greetings and welcome back to another exciting installment of the Fifth Column Podcast. This is your weekly rhetorical assault on the news cycle we put to make it and occasionally ourselves. I'm Camille Foster. I'm still here in New York. I'm with Michael Moynihan and Don Lemon. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
Matt Welch. I'm Don Lemon now.
It's Matt Welch.
Yeah.
No, you're not Don.
I will never be that rich.
It's well, and you'll also never be that terrible at interviewing.
I don't think he's that rich, right? I mean, maybe he asked
a little
for
bit. He made a little bit. Well, he made a little bit of CNN.
Yeah, but he asked for what $8 million in 7 Cybertrucks and some a pair of roller skates or
and
something.
And then trip to space.
Yeah,
I mean,
I mean, I would ask for those things as well. So I suppose we are men.
Yeah, you can't fault him for asking.
Similar appetites.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't fault him for asking.
Not sensually.
But is there's kind of a disconnect between what he believes he's worth and what he's actually worth. It's like when I see things on eBay that are priced higher than they are on Amazon. I'm like, what are you doing? That's not, you don't have any idea what that's worth, do you? And that's Don Lemon thinking about himself, because I watched some of that interview and I'm always willing, I'm happy and want to have, because, you know, I'm a heterodoxist, so I want to say the opposite thing and be like, oh, he's a great interviewer. He absolutely is the worst interviewer. It's almost like he didn't do the homework. He's stuttering through things. He's dropping all these things and you know, in front of.
Do you want to tell everyone who he was interviewing?
Yeah, they should know that.
I mean,
it's Don Lemon. Everyone knows Don Lemon. Yeah. We're all paying attention to Don Lemon, right? He was interviewing Elon Musk.
Yes.
And during his really bad,
very brief career working for with Elon
Musk. Didn't even
actually
happen. They were negotiating the deal for him to produce a show that would be distributed on X.
Very uncool. Yeah, very uncool. But I was like, do you remember when that happened?
Yeah.
I sent a text to you guys and I was like, oh my God, that's such a stupid dick move from Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To fire Don Lemon
totally.
Before the interview airs because it was a bad interview.
Yeah.
You guys were very, very severe in your criticism of Elon.
Still am.
As somebody who likes to change their mind and do mea culpas, I want to do a mea culpa here and say that I actually agree with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
If that's your new boss and you're like, why are you such a racist? I'm like, yeah, I don't think I want to work with you.
Here's where that he doesn't, he can get a half culpa or half something. Uh-huh. You don't hire the motherfucker in the first place.
Well, yeah.
Like when Ben Shapiro eventually fires Candace Owens, I'm not going to stand up and applaud. I'm going to say, what the fuck were you doing?
Did you see the thing that someone pointed out that she was liking tweets? I have to find this one. I don't want to get it wrong because I don't want Candace Owen to sue me. So she, a couple things recently was one that she said, I'm going to bet my reputation.
Oh, no.
I was like, girl, you don't have a reputation. Just, you know, on this story.
Yeah.
That Emmanuel Macron's wife is actually a man.
Yeah.
You saw this, right?
Yes. No.
I saw it.
Yeah, there's like some conspiracy theory. And I think the people have been taken to court. There's two women. Like one of them is like a farmer or something. Just some, this weird couple like conspiracy women in France who have been pushing this conspiracy theory that Emmanuel Macron's wife, who is I think 65 years older than he is.
And who Donald Trump was like, remember they were digging the holes out in the White House garden?
Oh, that's right.
He was looking at her like, oh, you're kind of a baddie.
Yeah. It turns out he's gay, according to Candace Owen. You should ask Candace Owen why her hero Donald Trump is gay. But yeah, she's like, it's clearly a man. And she's like, let me just break this down for 60 seconds. And I'm like, zoink, next, please. But someone pointed out that she liked a tweet that somebody responding to Rabbi Shmuley, who I've met a few times and is a bit much. He's a bit of a handful.
This is the guy, there was a video going around of him
supposedly saying the N-word.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I saw something
with
hard R. Yeah, hard R.
Yeah.
Like a racist R.
The exact phrase, Jew-hating nigger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he said, are you hating? I think maybe you misheard it, but not the last bit. You didn't hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's authentic. It was hard for me to tell what was going on there, because it's like a snippet of audio, and then it cuts off. Someone
Could
essentially
be.
Suggested it was
I think the post suggested it was a Twitter Spaces that he said this in and then quickly like disconnected it, which is just kind of insane. It's very hard to imagine that someone would actually do that, but
I mean, Rabbi sufficiently Shmuley, angry, maybe. Not, maybe. He referred to her in a tweet as the arch anti-Semite Candace Owens inciting her Jew hatred, blah, blah, blah.
That's nice.
So inciting her Jew hating followers to threaten to murder Jews, et cetera. So somebody responds to this. It says February 20th, Rabbi, are you drunk on Christian blood again?
Oh,
a classic blood libel.
What?
I mean, a literal blood libel.
Wait, and she liked that?
She liked that tweet.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes like, your fingers just like, you can't.
Yeah, no. In her defense, I've pocket blocked people. I've done all kinds of things unwittingly that way. So it's possible that this happened in her pocket.
It would be really ironic that it happened in her pocket on a tweet about her being an anti-Semite.
It would be. Yeah. It would be.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's not outside of the realm of possibility.
No, it's so not. No, it's not.
What was so bad about the Don Lemon interview? So with Elon Musk, because you guys were yammering about it in the never ending thread, and I didn't want to care because the obsession with Elon Musk. I saw, you know what? I'm going to intersperse an observation here about Instagram. It's been fucking ruined. Right, Instagram is my place to post inexplicable photos, usually of my 9-year-old, and that's fine. And now, when you look at other people's Instagram feed, they show threads. Threads.
I don't have that because I guess it's because I never signed up.
For I signed if you up, didn't but then sign I, up, then yeah,
I signed up, but I immediately like unsigned up because it was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And so every time, like one of the last ones I saw was from Jeff Jarvis.
Yeah,
the professor.
He's the best.
And he was like, what was the thread that he came up with? Like the banality of Elon, it's like, or something along those lines. Like that's the book title that I want. I don't want to actually write the book, but that's what I want to do. Like the obsession with Elon Musk as this sort of a quasi Nazi hate figure is so stupid.
Yeah.
As is like holding him up as a free speech champion. I don't think he's a free speech champion. He's just Elon Musk. He's a weird fucking dude.
Yeah.
And he's erratic about a lot of different things.
And also amazing in a lot of important ways.
And like he fucking put the biggest rocket into space ever last week.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
And yeah. Tesla.
That's, I mean, whatever. I don't like do that stuff. Hater. But
he did ask him about the Tesla Roadster in a very weird digression.
Yeah.
But he also did ask him things that were really uncool. Edward Snowden, actually, from what I saw of the interview, Edward Snowden really encapsulated what I thought about it. It was actually a really good tweet thread from Edward Snowden. He said, look, I've been in the controversial interview seat. What Don Lemon came after Elon Musk with felt like malice. Elon, in clear discomfort, opens up in good faith about his intensely private struggles. And that's the thing that when they're talking about ketamine, I think. Lemon picks precisely that moment to begin emptying an entire drawer of knives. That's a dick move, sure, but it's Lemon's right. It comes to the territory of being a partisan football, and Musk should have expected it. The real loss is that it's a huge waste of an interview because Lemon exhibits zero curiosity or interest in anything beyond posturing. Exactly right from what I saw. And it was, there's a funny bit where Elon says, you want censorship so bad, you can taste it. Or I can taste something like that. But Don Lemon is unprepared for somebody who is very calm, doesn't really need this interview.
Mm-hmm.
You get people there like where their political lives are on the line, their businesses are on the line. He's just a billionaire. He's the richest man, second richest man in the world, depending on the day. And he just doesn't give a fuck. And so when he comes after him with the DEI stuff, which is one of my favorite things, when he says like, you know, he's just making a very simple point. He's like, I just don't think that you should hire somebody and lower or change the qualifications based on race. And Don Lemon is like, why do you hate black people? It's very, very astonishing moment to watch of somebody kind of collapse like Lemon does. It's just the way he handles that particular section is like, oh, you came in here with this idea that if you believe these things, you are probably a racist. And when it goes beyond that, you have nothing to say. And then when he says the posturing, that was the thing. If you are a subscriber to this podcast and listen to the one that we released today, I mentioned in that Tucker Carlson said the right thing and it doesn't apply to him, right? He mistakenly got something right talking about the Putin interview. is he said, like, you know, all these interviewers come and it's all about them. That is true. Unfortunately, Tucker did a very, very bad interview that I think is worthless in almost every way. And I think he's a fool. And I think the whole thing was foolish. But that thing that he did describe does happen. And that's what you saw with Don Lemon. You saw him basically going through the posturing, like, well, you couldn't actually. And it was, none of it was about enlightening. It was about trying to get the moments for the clips. I mean, you live on CNN for many years and you live on Mediaite as like, that's the Tribune for people like him, a clip of him like destroying somebody or getting in some fisticuffs with somebody. And none of it, he kind of got pummeled by Musk in a way that wasn't really a pummeling. It was just a calm response of like, no, I never said that. Like, what are you talking about? And they're all very basic points. But I think what I saw, I didn't see the whole thing, but I thought Musk handled it pretty well. And I'm not somebody who's a fan of his. Generally not a fan of his. I think he's like, Matt Taibbi said the other day that he was full of shit on free speech. And I think there's something to that. But in this interview, I was like on his side and I wanted to be on Don Lemon's side just to be the heterodox.
The heterodox.
Habazaba.
You're doing a great job. Camille, what did you like about the interview?
Well, the moment that stood out to me was when they were talking about free speech. And at some point, Elon says, you know, when we take content down, we will take down things that are illegal.
Oh, the child pornography thing?
If it's legal, then we leave it there. And he says, well, what about all of these racist memes? Well, is it illegal? He says, no, but it's bad. And it's been up there for a long time. And all of the Christchurch shooter and various other shooters, they were radicalized by social media. So don't you feel an obligation to take it down? He says, and this is when he starts to talk about how much you love censorship. But at some point, he says, but there's child porn on there. Like, isn't that a form of moderation and censorship?
And he said,
that's fun. He said, that's illegal. I just said that if it's illegal, it has to come down. But I don't understand. And he was completely mystified by this distinction between legal and illegal.
I mean, that mystification underlines a lot of the kind of confusion and people talking past each other in journalistic debates right now and political debates too, right? Like literally at the Supreme Court, even today, when they were talking about Murthy versus Missouri, and I was doing my lunchtime watching CNN for 5 minutes and watching the way they were describing this case. And to remind everyone, this is the case that the states brought against the Biden administration for acting in a censorious way, especially on like Facebook and social media companies, having to do mostly with COVID alleged misinformation, but sometimes also with things having to do with like the election and like if you're an election denier or whatever. And which they absolutely did. I mean, they browbeat social media companies to not just like police their own courts in a way or their own users, but also they said, hey, these are the 12 people you need to do better with like kicking off your platforms. The Dirty Dozen, they literally called them at some point. So this came up on the Supreme Court just today. And seeing people talk about it, just as when the lower court came up with a pretty strong injunction against the Biden White House about it, there is a bafflement actually from the journalistic side. Mm-hmm. Like the White House is just trying to prevent the spread of misinformation. And these courts are like handcuffing them. Mm-hmm. Like I don't get it. And the other side is trying to make the point of that's the government pressuring private actors to censor people.
Yeah, but we like this particular government, and also they're doing it for the right reasons.
It's but that's such a fundamental departure from the conceptions of free speech that you would see within the journalism industry when I was young, which I guess was a long time ago. Maybe that's the problem here. Like it would be inconceivable. And yet now it's kind of a minority position when you look at it. And then interestingly, in the Supreme Court, which has otherwise been super strong in favor of the First Amendment and expanding and buttressing its strength over the last 20 years, 15, 20 years, you would say. I'm not sure. I mean, reading the coverage of this from Jacob Solomon, other people, Ilya Shapiro, who I think wrote an amicus brief for the Manhattan Institute by it, kind of seems like the Supreme Court's a little bit skeptical of the Fifth Circuit, I think it is, injunction against the White House, and they're not going to spread it. It's a complicated case because it all lies on the question of, are they really threatening you, or are they just like breathing really hard while they're suggesting that maybe you should look out at what your users are saying? But the reaction to it and the climate from which a lot of this sprang stems from that sort of journalistic idea that there is a truth, and that since there's bad people doing the mistruths,
yes,
we got to do something about
100%. And that's what you see in this interview, and you see the hangover for the amount of time that he was at CNN. And the CNN, that really kicks off in 2015-16 and the Trump stuff. And they're like, this is a funny joke. And you see that with Morning Joe. They have him on all the time. And then they're like, oh, God, we created this joke. It's part of this sort of self-flagellation, too, that we are responsible, assigning themselves
right.
far more responsibility, because it actually makes them feel good.
Look potent.
And, you know, the people that vote for Donald Trump that I met in the middle of the country have never, ever turned on MSNBC and wouldn't ever turn on MSNBC. And it wasn't them and CNN. But, you know, you have this thing where he's like, you know, but you have to do something about this. There's things that aren't true. And he's the type of guy who seems quite dim, actually, in that interview, that he seems a little too dim to understand that there is not a binary of things that everyone knows are true and everyone knows aren't true. And the nuances of some of those things, too, when it comes to like vaccine misinformation, which was the stuff that, or I should say COVID misinformation, which was the stuff that people, after the Donald Trump stuff, that's what they were really running with, right? So it's 2021, you know, Joe Biden's president now, and then it's like, okay, this is the next thing we have to attack because Donald Trump's no longer in office. We're going to ignore him for a little bit. It's a short period of time we did ignore him.
That was fun.
And that was fun. And then you have this thing about vaccine hesitancy of, was it a Wuhan lab thing? Was it a wet market? Was it a bat? Was it a dingo? And you couldn't ask those questions, et cetera. But there was the presumption in all that time, and it's not even to get into what was right and what was wrong, but there was a perception at the time that there were things that were right and there were wrong, despite the fact that it was very early in a disease that nobody had, this is brand new, and everyone knew the answers to this. And this is the kind of attitude you see him bring to Musk and say, well, these things are influencing people. Because there were no school shootings, there were no neo-Nazis, there was no racism before social media. And he's like, with social media is the thing that's... But, you know, look, one of the things that, the sections that I saw that really bothered me, and the reason it bothered me is because I do this for a living, and I interview people for a living, and I'm doing this on Wednesday, and the way I'm going about it, there's two people that I'm sitting down with. And I have to, it's a little harder. You have to know two people and how you think they're going to react to certain things and what's going to bring them out and what's going to pull them out of this and knowing what they believe about certain issues, right? And pitting them against each other, not for good clips, but just to get a good conversation going.
Right.
And so you're just kind of looking at it that way. And then you see, when you see people doing bad interviews, it's not that they're kind of ambling blindly, aimlessly through an interview. I always know what they're trying to do, right? Because it's a very easy thing to think. If you've done this one time, it's not like some superpower. I have everybody who's ever interviewed somebody knows this. There's a point at which he starts talking to him about ketamine.
To
Don Lemon. And Don Lemon says...
Well, Don asks him about
that. Asks him about it. And he said something about, like, do you have a prescription? Or something. And he said, it's kind of private to ask somebody about their medical, the prescriptions they take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he pauses and then he says, all right, well, I'm going to answer this anyway. And Don Lemon responds in a series of really awful and uncomfortable ways. But you see that he's trying to be Barbara Walters. Mm-hmm. He's like, so what is that like? But he's doing it in the most intrusive, like awful way, which then—
I'm going to get a gotcha out of this I'm going to draw you out.
But I'm going to draw you out, but we're going to get the emo part. But then you see the CNN thing that's part of his brain. It's been kind of poisoned by being at that network for so long. And then he tries to take the knife out and says, well, is that good for your investors? Like, you're on drugs. It's like, no.
Really?
And I will say this, is that ketamine is very promising when it comes to the treatment of depression.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's a gateway drug.
It's a gateway drug to happiness for some people. and that's what Elon Musk, he didn't want to be forthcoming. He was forthcoming, and it was actually a pretty interesting answer. Mm-hmm. But there's a doctor at Yale who is like one of the big guys in the ketamine kind of at Yale Medical School. And they've done this sort of the aerosolization of ketamine, like in an inhaler that I think Eli Lilly or one of these big pharma companies have done, because it's been really effective. And it's especially effective for people who have like extreme depression in like, you might kill yourself the next day. You get into that point. If you get ketamine drips, all the data suggests that it pulls you out of it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it takes about 3 months. You have to re-up it. I've been very interested in it myself. You can get it kind of off-label treatment in New York City at a number of places. They advertise very publicly. There's doctors that do it. And to conflate this, like, he's on drugs, and aren't you going to tank your company? What do your investors think? Like, are you smoked a joint with Joe Rogan? And he said, I had one puff. it was a play acting. I had one puff, whatever. It's like, I'm not on drugs. And this whole thing is like, it's a mixture of that. I'm trying to be Barbara Walters. And like, it's not like, well, what are you depressed about? Tell me, let's talk about that. It was a point where he became the cable news guy again in trying to get that little clip where he was like, aren't you going to destroy your company by taking a drug that you take for depression? It's just a cheap trick.
I mean, a cheap shot. Not that however Elon Musk or anyone else runs their company is by definition the greatest way, and that their consideration of investors is the greatest way to consider investors. But I'm just kind of guessing that Don Lemon's understanding of the role between a CEO and the investors of a company might be, in this case, a little bit less than Elon Musk's. It's a weird, like, I finally caught you.
Yeah.
You've never thought about this until I just brought it up.
Yeah.
Like, if you are in any kind of publicly traded company, you are constantly thinking about these fucking SEC requirements and all of the things that you're presenting to investors. It is an obsession with yours. And it's a very weird thing to come off like that.
There's in some of the pull sections of the interview that Washington Post had, you know, the five takeaways from Don Lemon's piece of garbage interview. One of them was there's Musk depressive episodes, but the first one, of course, is Musk resists responsibility for hate speech on X.
Yeah.
He resisted taking responsibility. And he's like, there's like 5 billion posts a day. I mean, and he has a conversation about, like, it depends on, you know, the if a tree falls in the forest stuff. I think I was playing that when you were.
Yeah. Right?
Like,
yeah.
No, like somebody tweets something and no one sees it.
Yeah.
That's like, it's hard to police all that stuff. There's never any sympathy because it has the wrong politics. And they don't like what he's done with it. So they all went to Threads. with the great Mark Zuckerberg company is better, but it's like this constant thing, like you have to be responsible for everything that's said on this platform, which I think had this platform existed in 1996, 97, 98, I mean, you and I were in the early stages of the internet, we would everybody be praising it and saying it's incredible, like you can get your ideas out. Everybody has a Gutenberg press. Do you remember that with blogs? Like, this is incredible.
It was
like,
democratization.
Now it's like, this is bad.
I mean, even Elon's explanation of how Community Notes works, which is hardly perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
It's pretty good, though.
But when he explains
the best thing about
that, the difference between, you know, a traditional news network like CNN, like running a story that turns out to be fucking false and wrong, they don't say anything about it for a day or so. Maybe there's a correction, but almost no one hears about the correction. Mm-hmm. And Elon, as he explains with Community Notes, if you've interacted with a post and then a day later a Community Note shows up, you're supposed to get a notification about it in the system. That's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And as the post continues to exist, the Community Note is right there attached to it and you have an opportunity to see it. And the way that the algorithm works, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but the explanation, and as I understand it, is in order for the note to be officially attached to a tweet, the reviewers, the people who are in the pool of Community Notes reviewers, like, you actually need to get people who would generally disagree to agree that, oh, this post is legitimate. It has sufficient context for it to get through. I mean, that's kind of a big deal.
It's pretty great. And
it's
also
not a bad innovation. No.
And
at
also,
all.
Elon Musk has been on the wrong side of Community Notes.
Sure. Many times. As he pointed out, you know, at the end of this interview, I'll make some claims, you'll make some claims. And what will end up happening is people will comment, and on Community Notes, they'll give you some indication of whether or not it's
Right.
And they should all publish a mea culpa, because getting things wrong is just, you can't live with
yourself.
Well,
it depends.
It means that you're a monster and don't care about the truth.
I do think that, like, I didn't see the whole interview. Lemon's questions and his bafflement at the conversation about free speech is what people should pay attention to if they want to, just because I think it does show what happens.
So wait, you're suggesting people should watch this?
Yeah, for sure.
Huh. Is that okay? Can we do that sort of thing?
I think we can still do that.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like it. I didn't like it, but I think they should watch it.
Weird.
This is a shocking concept.
Wait, who do I call about what is the appropriate amount of dislike of this interview?
Well, I thought that they had the electrodes like attached to you.
We'll find out if this is okay.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
All show audio.
We'll see if all the good people tell us that we're bad.
Yeah.
But there was the bit I saw that, like, when he said some, you know, typically Musk stupid things, like, you know, when countering stupidity with stupidity, when Don Lemon says, you know, this has become like this hive of right-wing conspiracy theory, because, you know, without X, God knows where it just would stop. Yeah. People would just go walk outside and breathe and that was a stupid idea. but he said, and Musk responds by saying, well, before it was just, it was the domain of only the far left. And it's like, that's not true.
Not
at all. Like, were you on it before? That's not true at all.
Yeah.
That's total bullshit. So he does that too. So not just Don Lemon, but Don Lemon's job is to be an interviewer. Elon Musk is to be a slightly weird autistic.
Slightly.
Yeah, slightly. Like, also brilliant business
super
owner.
Super accomplished.
Yeah. He is the one who should know how to ask questions, know how to handle an interview, and be prepared for it.
He might be like the best entrepreneur of our time.
I don't know, very arguable.
Like, who else is in the conversation? Like Jeff Bezos and Amazon.
Yeah,
it's kind of one trick pony.
But I'm just Elon kidding. Running multiple companies.
No, I mean,
doing extraordinary things. At the
Kyle
same time,
Dunnigan, we should deal. Like just drop the Kyle Dunnigan rap.
Oh yeah,
when that's why I'm cool.
Yeah, that's why I'm cool. That's very cool.
So I will always give him a tremendous amount of grace because I'm grateful for my Model S, and I'm also grateful for the SpaceX situation, and hope to ride on a rocket ship.
And then the forthcoming Roadster. Is going to be $200,000, so it's a bit out
which
of my
was
reach.
Apparently, Jetson's like.
I mean, apparently,
that part of the interview was interesting to me. Yeah, and I'm glad that Don Lemon kept asking questions about that. But wait, does it have wings?
Yeah,
it was like the Jetsons.
And he was like, maybe. It was hilarious because Jogan literally says, "Does it fly?" And he's like, "I don't know. We'll see." Okay, cool.
I mean, I'm excited.
Yeah, I am too. But I can't afford it.
I'm bouncing in my chair right now.
Yeah, I gotta.
What's the over under of Camille like being? In the first like 500 people to get that car.
So at 200K? My wife is not going to like
that. Yeah.
I think I've got a better shot at getting the Cybertruck than the Roadster.
All rusty. And
who knows? It probably won't be available for another 2 years.
I can't.
At that time, maybe it'll be fine.
We'll see. No. I mean, I would love that. I would feel bad like test driving, and I can't afford half of my life at this point. I don't know. I used to have a job where they didn't make me work and paid me a ton of money. And that doesn't happen. Now, like, my daughter is like really desperate to, this is what's great when you have like a girl that grows up in New York, but she is a mass hole in her bones. And she knows that the Bruins are playing the Rangers in Boston on Thursday. And she's on spring break. And she's like, "Papa, did you get tickets yet?" And she texted me this morning. I was working and she was like, "Did you get tickets to the Ranger game yet?" And I'm like, "Babe, it's the Rangers." Like, I looked, the tickets are like $500 a piece.
Are the good tickets are $500? Just tickets?
Well, you can get, I'm not going to put my daughter up in the nosebleeds.
Yeah.
Particularly in Boston. Cause it's just like, people are like, "Fuck you." It's like, it's not good for her. So if you have any listeners that have Bruins season tickets, shoot me a line. I'll pay for them. I'll pay face value.
If you had a Vision Pro.
What?
I mean, you can like sit on the whatever it is line.
Have you sat on Steph Curry's lap like you always wanted to?
Yeah.
I've never wanted to do
that. Really?
That is wrong.
Is it?
It's not true. I'm not even a Steph Curry fan. I think he ruined the game of basketball.
I'm trying to get your homophobia to come out. Right?
I mean, I do not have any homophobia anymore.
I'm
Jamaican, but that part of me is dead now. Uh-huh. I love the gays.
If you are Jamaican, I might even have to say anymore.
That's
like, true. It's not believable otherwise.
No, I know. And like, I've been candid about my journey on this podcast. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard the Jamaican national anthem? Push the body boy to the sea!
Because we know he can't swim!
Come on, Jamaican!
We can do it.
We can. Oh, it's God. Called We Can Do It, Jamaica.
You ever notice that Jamaica has like... Jamaica will compete in the bobsled, but yeah, not in swimming?
Yeah, no.
That's kind of interesting. Like,
no, that's too gay. It's like, really? No, it's not. It's like, no, it's gay. Men in little pants in the water. I'm like, all right, fine, whatever you say.
And dude. Aman, about it, why? And Aman, not.
I wanted to do a thing, an AI God. Thing, in which we replaced Don Lemon in that interview with like a very grumpy Jamaican guy asking Elon Musk about the Batsy Boy. Which,
oh my God,
I love terms that are really offensive in other cultures, and when they don't mean anything to you, yeah. So it doesn't feel wrong at all. And there's a word.
Well, Batsy Boy shouldn't be offensive.
But it is just
like
in Jamaica,
a technical
right?
description of the situation.
Yeah, I
can you translate it for us? Can you translate in
Bati?
English? Yeah.
It bati. Bum.
But.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it would be boy. What the British would call bum boy. That's what they used to say in England.
Oh, is that what they say?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, not anymore. Not anymore. It's a different country now.
Oh, we still say that in Jamaica. Sorry.
Yeah, we prefer the old ways.
You guys. Yeah. We don't like the colonialism, but we love the terminology. No, there was a word in Swedish that I said one time, and we have a lot of Swedish listeners, and I said it just like in a conversation, like knowing that it was offensive, and people just looked at me like, what the fuck did you say? And I was like, oh, really? Is that bad?
Negerbollen?
No. No. They changed that.
That's the thing.
No, they changed that.
That's great. It's just great when you say it.
No, but it by the way, like I just...
That's as close as we get.
For the record,
Jim Jones.
I want to make sure that it's, you know, that compound word there. The first word "nigger" is Negro. That's what it actually means.
Yeah,
it's right. Not. It's not the hard.
Wait, is it supposed to be better? Or
well, no, but they still changed it because it was a small chocolate ball with like kind of coconut flakes on it, and it was literally called Negro balls.
Yeah,
and I was like, I swear to God, they still called it. I'm not joking. When I moved to Sweden, they still called it that.
Yeah,
like the little. I think it was Stora Katten, this like people in Stockholm will know that place, like an old kind of bakery, konditori where you get coffee and stuff. And they had it and I was like, arched an eyebrow and I was like, is that? And they're like, yeah.
So wait, is
but then they changed it to they just called them choklad bowl. They're just chocolate balls now.
So is this, is there a relationship between this delicacy and Chef on South Park with the whole chocolate salty balls thing?
I wonder.
It's very similar. Yeah, it's very similar. But that's literally what...
It'd be shocking to discover that today.
I could
still remember the first time I heard Isaac Hayes sing.
Oh, ooh, yeah, yeah.
Suck on my chocolate salty balls.
Yeah, that's right.
Put them in your mouth.
Yes.
amazing.
That I wanted to...
We lived in a very different time.
That was a good time.
We absolutely did. One of the things I used... When I went to Sweden initially, I wanted to make... like a coffee table book of everything in the country that was racist, but nobody really understood. Mm-hmm. And I think they figured it out later because, you know, they were literally doing Black Lives Matter, like taking the knee in Swedish soccer games. And I was like, guys, wait, what? What are you doing? Like, I appreciate that you want to be part of this, but like now they went way too far. But my favorite was there was chocolate covered puffed rice called Schinapuffer, Chinese puffs. And the picture on it was a guy in literally a swooping hat.
Oh, no.
With this, like, pulled, but like the eyes. It was just like.
He's like actually pulling his eyes on the packaging.
And I literally, I'm like, this is pre kind of what people call woke, unfortunately, but that pre this time by a lot, right? Yeah. And it's me. And I was like, dude, you guys got to fucking change this stuff. This is like bad. Like, what are you doing? And then all like the Turkish Delight stuff is all sorts of like people on magic carpets. And like, God, you guys don't see anyone up here. And now
they're all wearing face paint.
Yeah.
This is the best part.
We ever bring back to you, I bought a thing for you and Joanna back in those days that was a French old-timey, some kind of lemon or fruit squeezer that was just incredibly explicitly racist.
Yes.
Yeah. You did have that.
Yes.
You do have
that's right. And I just wanted to show this to you, and you can't see this because we're on a video podcast.
Yes.
That headline in Svenska Dagbladet literally means that.
Oh no! Yeah.
But that
the
headline
package is very happy. Is yellow.
The headline says that is the end. It's the end of that logo image on China Puffer. They've stopped it.
China Puffer. Mm.
Yeah, yeah, mm. and that is from.
That was a happy little.
Yes, definitely logo. Happy. And end of the picture, and that was in 2011. So I guess they caught up. So China Puffer is now. Still called Chinese Puffs, but it just has a hat on it. Literally just a hat now. Hmm. Just nobody in the hat.
Gosh.
So there you go. It's just a hat. So,
that's funny.
I mean, is that better? Maybe a little.
Maybe.
Maybe a little.
I don't know if the first one's that bad anyway. But I remember that when I saw in Mexico, the first time I was in Mexico, the number of times I saw like logos of people like sleeping under sombreros. Yeah. Totally serious. I have photos of it. And I was like, wait, this is in Mexico. This shit is racist. I'm like, oh, no, this is Mexico. You guys can, this is, you're talking about yourself. So that's fine.
Are they selling it back to gringos? It's like a.
No, this was not a place where you sold anything except for cocaine back to gringos. That kind of neighborhood. Okay. So, what are we going to talk about?
Oh, well, did you know that Master P like makes a whole line of food? And Master there's P a does? Bunch of like Snoop related.
Is it just called
Snoop Mama oatmeal or something like that?
Really?
There's like a whole replacement of the.
No.
Yeah.
Is it No Limit Foods or something?
I don't exactly know. Probably something like that.
He was almost a professional basketball.
But you could find it.
Played in the preseason.
It's on safe. Yeah, played in preseason.
Yeah,
for
preseason
for the Charlotte Hornets, I think.
Yeah, was it wasn't
Charlotte
good.
Hornets? I think it was the Hornets.
He was like a fat point guard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was like a fat. Yeah, Uncle P's Louisiana season pancake mix. So if you don't have Bruins tickets for Thursday, can you send me some pancake mix? And the greatest thing is there's a picture of like older Master P on it in sunglasses.
Uncle P. Man.
Yeah, it's
pretty And you know, I think he came out with that stuff at the time that like Aunt Jemima was getting canceled. It was like, yes. This is his response.
Oh shit, it is because it's that and the rice.
Yeah.
So it's the white Uncle
Ben's and Aunt Jemima.
Yeah, so
get
Uncle
rid
P's
of them,
rice.
Replace it with Uncle P and it's fine.
Yeah.
Nah.
Hoodie hoops.
Mm.
Hoops from the hood.
What would we put Camille's face on to sell?
Anything? Mm,
it's interesting.
Whatever you want.
It'd have to be a food product.
You sell water to a fish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a food product.
It doesn't have to be a food product. No. Wait, I mean, I know what he
something
just,
luxurious.
Would you make sneakers if you became really like kind of.
Would I make sneakers?
Would you say,
I
like,
no
I need
idea
to design.
How to do that.
No, but not like you're Chinese, like playing the factory.
I meant Sheena the sneakers. Design, with the design aspects. I would just make me more of those.
Yeah, well, that's what Kanye
like,
does.
I just want 700s.
He's not like at the drafting
which
table.
Which is actually like very hard for me. Like when I see the correspondence now with. What's his name?
Milo.
Milo.
Yiannopoulos.
Like working at Yeezy. Yeah. It actually makes me feel a little weird.
Milo. But
granted, all the shoes that I'm buying are old shoes. Granted, he has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But it just.
You should be doing some arbitrage if you're not. Like just stocking up on the shit that is really cheap now because Kanye West is a super anti-Semite.
Wait till the very good people.
Not impacted the price of in the market.
Wait till the very good people on the internet and on Twitter and probably on Threads find out that I did a piece with Milo Yiannopoulos. I platformed Milo Yiannopoulos a long time ago. It was great. It was one of my favorite pieces that I did because, you know, he's always playing for the camera, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was just the, but when you know what he's about to do all the time, because that was one of the things
you interviewed him when he was like staying in that hotel paid for by the Mercers just before that bus stop.
I went to his house that he was paid for by the Mercers.
And he's like had bottles of champagne all over the
place. Oh, we went
just
to
like blowing their money.
Dude, we went to the Trump Doral for lunch.
Yes, I remember.
And I was like, you know, I have to pay for all of my stuff. And then the bill, and I was a journalist, a confession. The bill came and I was like, yeah, it's all right. I cannot disaggregate the 78 drinks that I had during the interview. And then at the end of it, we went out onto the patio and did the interview.
Yeah.
And I was like very punchy because I'd had a couple of drinks and I went in really hard on him.
Mm.
Really, really hard on him. And it was hilarious because I'll give him credit in one aspect. And this is the aspect of performance that when you know it's performance. is you go in really hard on somebody and just like really, it did not go well for him, I have to say. In every interview he did, everything was just a cakewalk for him because he would say the same thing and the people who were interviewing him thought, and this is a big mistake, sorry to be boring about interviews again, this is a big mistake interviewers make, and this is Don Lemon was doing a version of this, is that when you know that your audience and you yourself think that you are the moral superior, that's will get you through, and it won't, right? And you're like, I mean, come on, Milo, you said this. And everyone asked him in every interview the exact same thing. They referenced the same quotes, and he had a response for everyone. He was so used to it. And I asked him something that he had posted on his Facebook page 6 hours before. And he was like, I'm sorry, what? And I was like, yeah, it was something about he didn't care about like dead Syrian children. It was like really bad. And I will give him credit in the sense that he crumbled. And then afterwards, this is the type of thing where somebody just walks out, you know, either throws a drink at you or just says, fuck you, pack your stuff up, whatever, which is easier in this case because you're in public and they don't have to kick you out of their house. But he texted me 20 minutes later and he was like, do you want to go out to the Fontainebleau tonight in Miami? And I was like, yeah, no, I don't. I actually don't want to do that with you. So I didn't do that. But yeah, anyway.
I mean, actually, Matt, you might be there. There are some deals. I'm about to buy a new pair of 700s right now.
What are 700s?
I mean, there's the ones I'm wearing right now.
He's just buying Kanye.
I love the fact that we did a podcast last night. We were just so full of venom.
Yeah.
That today is just like,
I feel good.
We're like just talking about sneakers and
I feel great.
Weird shit.
We're fine.
Master P.
Everything's fine. I mean, that's important. Yeah. That's important.
Oh, I don't know why you're saying this when democracy is ending. I had a very close friend of mine who, I think both of you know, who sent me a long email today in that kind of vein.
Yeah. I can't know which candidate they support because at this point, both candidates have assured me.
Yes, that the other
that
person.
Whoever wins, if it's not them, democracy ends.
Yes, correct.
Both Donald Trump and Joe Biden have assured me that that's the case.
And it's funny.
You had to like rack your brain for Joe Biden for a second.
I did.
He's just like Joe Biden. Everyone does it. Everyone loses.
Wait, what is his name?
The stutter.
He's
the guy who
died. He fell off the stage before he came in here. walked into the band, walked into the tuba player.
You know the thing.
Man. Come on, man. Uncle P's. Uncle P's pancake mix. No, it was about that and about Trump and democracy and you should be and aren't you worried? And this is something
because of the bloodbath. That's why
it actually wasn't. No, it was about something else. And it was about another mutual friend of ours. So I thought like, oh, gone a little off the rails. Mm. And he was like, no, I actually agree with him more than you would think. And I know what you're saying. And he was very nice and said, I know what you're saying. But you know, you should realize that this, and he laid out this case, which I thought actually was and I'll send it to you guys, but maybe I shouldn't if you still get mad about that. But it was one of the best cases that I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I see what he's saying.
Hmm.
In my
what is the argument?
Well, my response to him, which I haven't written yet because he sent me a very long email, and you know, it's always been that the desire of Donald Trump is there. I agree with you. I mean, he wants the
dark
these things.
Desire.
The dark desire to turn this country into something in his totally insane vision of what a country like America should look like is true. I think that is what people are right about that. That's for sure. I mean, he says it himself. You can't deny it. I just have always made the argument that the institutions are more robust than people give them credit for. I mean, this is a very, you know, rough version of it. I've laid out the case.
Less robust.
But what do you mean? But what do you mean by like dark desires? Because is it just a matter of not having a respect for the various restrictions?
I'll give you an example of this.
Okay.
Yeah. An example of this that came in Donald Trump's interview on Sunday on Fox News.
Yeah.
Howard Kurtz.
It was a very strange interview.
Very strange.
Yeah.
But Kurtz, who pushed back a fair amount. Like he did a decent job.
A little bit. Yeah. There were some points disappointed me.
Yeah. But so he says, TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump has changed his mind on TikTok. And he says, you know, is this because you have a donor? And, you know, you talk to the guys from the Club for Growth and that guy invests in ByteDance, which is the owner of TikTok, et cetera.
Jeff Yass.
And what his response was very telling. And I was thinking about it only because of the email that my friend sent me. And he immediately said, he's like, well, if we're going to ban that, I think before, because it's much worse, is we ban Facebook. And it's like, oh my, no.
He said, do the same thing to Facebook.
But that's not what this is about. You're revealing that your instincts on this are to get rid of a political enemy.
Yes.
That they have propaganda on this platform that is contrary to what you think a media company should be putting out there because it's negative towards you. And so therefore, Facebook is actually worse in that front. It's like, no, this is about it being a Chinese company in China being a dictatorship and them controlling it. Mark Zuckerberg lives in California.
Yeah.
Right? He's American. What are you
He's
talking
weird.
About? He's very weird. But
not a Chi-Com.
Not a Chi-Com. And the fact that that was his response was I can think of other things. And Kurtz goes on.
But Kurtz doesn't follow up on the Facebook thing.
He does not.
He doesn't say, wait a minute, what do you mean do the same
thing? He had a half a sentence where he was like something about the Chinese government. But he did ask him, when you said they should take the licenses away from two broadcast organizations that don't have licenses.
Yeah.
Which is MSNBC and CNN.
Yeah.
He goes off on this like very weird, you know, digression about X, Y, and Z doesn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
But it is true that he's like, we should shut them down because they're telling lies.
Yeah.
And there's a very famous quote that is not famous at all, by the way, I just realized because this shows my age. There is a woman who was the official censor for the Sandinista government in Nicaragua.
Yeah, it's not a famous quote.
No. And her name, I believe, was Nelba Blandon. I think that was her name. And
she's married to Barry Weiss. It's really strange.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a new book coming out. And Nelba Blandon said, when asked by a reporter, why you shut down La Prensa, which was the opposition newspaper. And Nelba Blandon said, well, they were saying that we suppress free speech and we couldn't allow them to say that. And it's like the most perfect quote ever. And it is the instinct that you get from Hugo Chavez type people. It's like, they took away the TV license of RCTV in Venezuela because and literally people on the far left who defended Chavez said he didn't shut them down. They just didn't get a new license.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the instinct that he has, which is amazingly dangerous.
I mean, this is the shit that makes me so upset about the ridiculous
bloodbath
freak out. Like there are so many things that Donald Trump actually says. Even when he says them in ways that are barely articulate, that he actually says and believes that are worth highlighting and deconstructing and freaking the fuck out about. Mm-hmm. When he says something that you probably shouldn't freak out about, he just uses a particular word in context appropriately, and you pretend, masquerade, as though he is actually suggesting that there will be widespread political violence and murder if he's not elected president. And maybe he'll suggest that next week. But he didn't do it in that particular speech.
And
that actually matters a lot.
They're literally tripling down on this. Yeah. It's crazy.
There's two things that we're seeing, right? It's one group of people who say, well, look, we shouldn't give him the benefit of the doubt. It's at least plausible. It's possible. Anyways, that he could have meant it in the most nefarious way possible.
That's not what journalists do.
And then there are the other people who are like, no, he definitely means it.
Yeah.
And the evidence to support that is, did you see January 6th?
Yeah, but that's, yes. And that is also, it's exactly what you're saying. I mean, because it's like, yes, he does other things that are terrible. Focus on those.
Yeah.
And stop. And, you know, I read on the paying wethefifth.substack.com guys, episode that we released today, I read Jonah Goldberg's tweet when he's like, you're really undermining the case of people like Jonah who really loathe Donald Trump and work very hard to, you know, wrest the Republican Party from his greasy hands. And he's just like, you know, look, people start not believing anything that you say. And it's a very similar thing with the COVID stuff. It's like, don't wear a mask. We're just trying to, you know, it's like, and people are going to stop believing you. And you see that. I saw a poll the other day about, you know, trust in the medical establishment being at an all-time low. And it's no wonder why.
Makes sense.
And it's like the media saying these things. Well, yeah, I mean, he didn't say it directly, but we know what he means. It's like, well, I don't know what he means because he didn't say that. I can't divine what Donald Trump means when he talks about cars, Chinese cars getting 100% tariffs on them, he probably said 75,000 things that were dumber, crazier, and more offensive to the idea of American democracy in that speech. But instead, bloodbath is a great pull quote, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a, easy. Just go with that one.
I mean, everyone's hunting adjectives and policing adjectives.
Yeah.
They'll police it if you don't respond to something with the appropriate level of, if you don't like call out a lie and say that it's a lie.
You mean you're saying that some person sets a level of disagreement with something, and if you don't meet that, they get mad at you?
If you're insufficiently denunciatory.
Yeah.
It's a real goddamn problem for certain people who have like smaller and smaller audiences. It's very strange. It's hard to figure that out.
Did you see Jen Psaki talking about the bloodbath?
Yeah, thing? I did. Yeah.
Where she says, well, yeah, I mean, the Trump campaign is saying you have to look at the full context. He was talking about the auto industry, but no, let's look at the real.
Yeah.
In the real full context.
In 1962.
Wow. I mean, you could go back to like the Mesozoic age or some shit. That's the real full context. The formation of the Earth during this period of the universe's development.
I mean, I want people to work back from people who are like legitimately, and I think legitimately, not just like from their own point of view, but like I agree with them, like worried about the prospect of another Trump presidency and what it would do to the liberal institutions of America. I think it would be bad. It'd be deleterious. It would like extend this long bad era. Right. So what I want those people to do is to act as if they were fucking serious about it. And if you were fucking serious about it, you wouldn't police adjectives. Mm-hmm. You would work backwards from power. Right. So like take the media for example, right? He has said several times over the years, including when he was first running for president, oh, Saturday Night Live did this joke about me. That's terrible. They should have we should do a fairness doctrine or have their license revoked and stuff. And it was like, are you fucking kidding me? What are you doing? But we knew back then in 2016 and even in late Trump presidency, you're not going to be able to get away with that because the people that you appointed, I mean, Ajit Pai worked for Donald Trump.
Correct.
That wasn't going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Under him.
Yeah.
And which he made clear to him. And he also made clear on this podcast in different ways. And other people did as well. Well, who works for Donald Trump next time around? Mm-hmm. And also what has been laid.
That, by the way, was, and sorry to interrupt, but that was in the email that I got.
Yeah.
A very funny bit. Like think of the next people who are going to be staffing the administration.
That's a super important point.
I think that's something that I have to contend with. I think that's a really important point.
Yeah. And also it's important to contend with what has Joe Biden done with sort of personalized executive power and antitrust, mm-hmm. right? Like Donald Trump wants to, and did actually in his presidency, beef up antitrust mm-hmm. to go after the people he doesn't like.
Correct.
Right? Joe Biden, it's not that he doesn't like them personally necessarily. He just like, do we really need, Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel to merge?
Yeah.
Like, at some point, there is a little bit of a what's the fucking difference? Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a difference if you're using it as your kind of personal weapon or like retribution for someone who insulted you. I think that is a material difference than if you just have a super bad protectionist, mercantilist policy idea.
Yeah.
But both are bad.
Both are bad.
And you are giving that person and that seat power and legitimacy for the next person.
Yeah.
You are handing the baton to the next person and the baton is bigger and it can beat more ass.
Yeah.
Right. And there has never been throughout the entire Trump era, never, not even once, people looking at it and saying, it's really bad when a bad person has all that power. Maybe we should start thinking about not having so much power concentrated. It's never come up except for creepy libertarians.
One of the things that people would say, and I had people tell me this during the first Trump administration, that what people said in Capitol Hill about Donald Trump on camera, on the House floor in front of him to people in the White House, and what they said privately were totally different.
Yeah. Mm.
And that's a cowardice that you would expect from shitty politicians. It does in some way offer a ray of hope that these people actually don't believe this. And it's not much of a hope. It's a very, very, very thin reed to say that they all they care about is power. And if the wind changes a little bit, but that is also hopeful in some ways.
Yep.
That if the wind changes, they're not going to be so committed to this. But at the same time,
we'll never forgive those motherfuckers, by the way.
Of course not. No. And none of them have a backbone or have any principles. And I have gone on more rants in this podcast about politicians having absolutely zero principle about this stuff. But, you know, it is kind of interesting that when you see Donald Trump knows this, and if he becomes president again, and it's looking at the moment that that's a pretty high possibility, that, and Harry Enten, I think I sent you a screenshot of him. Harry's very, very, find Harry Enten's bit, and Harry's brilliant, on CNN talking about the Hispanic vote going wildly towards Trump and just a huge 20-point difference between exit polls and current polls now, and that being in very important states like Nevada and Arizona. But, you know, Trump knows that he gets one more shot. And I know that if you talk to the really hyperventilating people, it's like, no, he's going to never leave. It's like, that's not going to happen. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. And I will put my money on it right now, and we'll come back in 4 years, in 5 years, whatever, and I will be right. And I'm very confident in that for a variety of reasons. But what he's actually interested in is keeping the party in his image when he's no longer there, for people to be afraid of him. And that's why you see very small things like Laura Trump is now, what, co-chair?
Not a small thing.
Not a small thing.
All the money
that
Republicans raise goes to Trump's legal
local
defense.
Races go through a Trump family member now.
Yeah.
And it went through people who were sycophants of Trump before. But that can move, right? And particularly when he's off the scene, if he dies, if he, you know, has one more. And also, like, he's going to do three more turns. It's like, dude, he's also, you know, going to be 87. So
he's not getting better.
He's not getting better, no. And so you have this thing of, like, you know, entrenching power that I think that there's a possibility, a very real possibility, that the Republican Party can boomerang back in some way. Well, no, it's forever. It's like, well, no, there was a neocon period that lasted an amount of time that everyone who wrote books about this said it was going to last forever. Literally, that this is it. It's been taken over by neocons. That's it. You can fuck up big time, like Iraq, and even, I would say, to a lesser degree, Afghanistan, which had less resonance in that way. And people don't like you anymore, right? You have the, you know, Taftian Republicans, the kind of isolationist Republicans that 1937, 38, 39, and then on the day after Pearl Harbor, the day after, literally the day after, was the dissolution of the America First Committee. It ended itself the following day, and that ended. And they have all these periods of different types of Republican parties. So I don't think it's going to last forever, but he's trying to make sure that it does. One thing about the Howard Kurtz interview, and when people talk about the bloodbath, right? Why are you focusing on this when there's other things to focus on that have the same word? Right in the root. And I'm going to read you what Howard Kurtz said. Why do you use words like vermin and poisoning of the blood? The press, as you know, immediately reacts to that by saying, well, that's the kind of language that Hitler and Mussolini used. Trump's response, because our country is being poisoned. There's nothing ambiguous about that. There's no debate that we can have over and over and over about what those words mean. That's bad stuff. Right there. Very obviously, because our country is being poisoned.
It's not.
It's not being poisoned. There's enormous amounts of problems that are happening because of the problems at the border. And we've talked about them. And I think that maybe even alienated some real, I have anyway, rock-ribbed libertarian open borders types. And I apologize for that. But my baggage has moved a little bit on this. But that kind of language, because our country is being poisoned. You don't need to invent shit for Donald Trump. So keep to the stuff like that.
Yeah. And also tether it to stuff that he has latitude or would have latitude as president. President has a lot of latitude on trade deals.
Yep.
He wants 100% tariff on cars from red China.
Built in Mexico.
And like 10%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A universal 10% tariff everywhere. It's insane. It's a horrible idea. Like in an impoverishing idea.
Both parties love it.
And he also is, you know, as a president, you have a lot of latitude in immigration policy. And some of it you might like, depending on where you're at. Yeah. Some of it is going to be draconian. And if it was up to him, and remember in his first administration, he really did try a Muslim ban. Mm-hmm. It was thrown out in the courts. It was modified. became seven countries that were predominantly Muslim or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, that's what, but the attempt was there from the beginning.
But I mean, Welch, one has to accept that he did say that it would only be in place until he could figure out what's going on.
And
he still hasn't figured it out. I mean,
and also like, give that motherfucker credit.
Qualified.
Yeah. That, how many times have everyone used that phrase?
Sure.
Yeah.
We need to like stop Peter Suderman until we can find out what's going on. Like I at least think that on a like a daily basis. No, it's genius. Like he has got these turns of what is the Joe Biden turn of phrase besides come on man?
No, I mean come on man. I mean
it's good. It's good.
Yeah, but he's got I'm not kidding around. He's got I mean, he doesn't have a you'd be in jail, which is possibly one of the greatest moments in debate.
That's pretty good.
And people need to separate the art from the artist to realize that regardless of what he is, that was a fucking
that also in for Kanye and Donald
wrong.
Trump.
Yeah. Wrong is also really, really good. But
I might have used that recently.
The thing that people don't connect, because I think we've had this conversation before, of the complications that come with, I think I talked about this maybe on Meghan McCain's podcast when I was on it recently, the complications that people have when dealing with economic policy. And it's very, very tough to figure this stuff out. And that's why when you're young, that radical socialist policies seem great. We'll just make everybody be equal, you know, just share everything. And, you know, no one person can make that much. And it's like, oh, that makes sense. And it doesn't make any sense. But the thing that the average person is not connecting here is that when you go on and everyone's talking about blood-sucking fucking bloodbaths and vermin and like reacting to the language, and they should react to the ones that are real and not the ones that aren't real, is that what is a 100% tariff, 10% tariff, 15% tariffs on anything? It's inflationary. What is the argument that Donald Trump is making about the economy, that we have out of control inflation? And you are in the next breath saying, well, I need to do things that will be wildly inflationary, increase the cost of goods for poor people across the country. It's like, maybe talk about that. That'd be substantial, but it's not going to get you the Mediaite hit. It's not going to have Jen Psaki, you know, breathing heavily and saying, oh my God, how horrible it is. Yeah. We know the reason he's going to win this election now is that we know he's horrible and nobody fucking cares. I don't know why they don't care, but they don't fucking care. That's when you are diagnosing something just in a clinical kind of way. Is like, I just can tell you, I don't know why, I don't know how to make them care, but if you keep telling them, it's not going to work because it never has. They don't care.
I'm still on record as it was on Megyn Kelly last time, and we're going on again.
When?
I think next week.
Great.
Yeah. Should be a bloodbath.
Oh, great. Yeah. I hope it's all about a trans Fonny Willis.
I don't think that he's going to win. I would still bet. My bet is that we should probably like just bet.
I mean, I don't engage in those wagers.
So me and Mark.
I do. Yeah.
I'll let you guys do it. I will hold the
I will put the Bruins tickets that will no longer be good because the person will give them to me or I'll buy them from them and I'll go to the game on Thursday.
Yeah.
I will put that on the game. Yeah. I'll bet that. Okay. I'll put the Stubbs autographed by Brad Marchand on the table.
That's fair enough.
Or Bobby Orr.
But you still don't think he'll win.
I don't have a lot of confidence in it, but I think that there's a ceiling on his attraction to the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's like the Lara Trump situation is bad for him.
Yeah.
Or it indicates a badness. There's going to be such a spending mismatch.
The challenges with the RNC is having.
I mean, just they have a huge challenge on raising money.
Yeah.
He can look really great in a Republican primary. He can squash the competition. He did. Absolutely did. He has full control over the party. There's no question about that. It's very impressive to take over a party. And at the same time, he has not shown in a really, really long time, basically since Election Day in 2016, that he can get even a plurality of independents and people who are not Republican Party members. And he's been polling better than Joe Biden among independents for a good while now, including in all the swing states.
Yeah.
So there's all that. I still think that there is that. It's more of a suspect, right? That the reality hasn't sunk in that he's going to be the nominee, and that changes the dynamic of things. And then just there's a wild card. I mean, he's $462 million. He's got to cough up by like Tuesday.
Yeah. And they're going to start seizing his assets. Yeah.
Some of that will redound to his benefit because it'll 100%. Seem like people are coming after him unfairly, which they are. There's no question, I think, that the legal system in certain places are coming after him unfairly and disproportionately. Some of it also is just going to be deleterious to his mm-hmm. campaign of the functioning of it. Mm-hmm. And then
why do you think people don't care about that?
About what? About the situation in the courts?
The fact that we have reams of evidence that when you do stuff like this happens, and I know the response would be, well, it should happen because it's real and he should be prosecuted, blah, blah, blah. But that these people want to see Donald Trump like just erased from the political scene, mm-hmm. right? And I wouldn't be upset about that either. But they've been trying to take shortcuts forever to do this. And every time it blows up in their face and they keep on pushing it and they cannot separate two things that if you are on this podcast saying, as Matt just said, they're going after him. And I think it's partially unfair that the people who are desperate to get rid of him, the sort of the real dug in anti-Trump people mm-hmm. would be so upset by that because they can't separate the fact that he's a shitty person and bad for the country politically, I think. And I can hold a separate thought in my head that I don't think that Letitia James is doing the right thing here and doing it for the right reasons. And I think it's slightly unfair.
And like $85 million to E. Jean Carroll seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot, particularly when you actually, not many people followed the ins and outs of that case. And the reason-
Language.
Very, very carefully chosen.
Yeah.
And the reason was that there was no Lewinsky type stuff. There was no, like, you remember the dress and the stain and the cigar and all this stuff. It was just like, she didn't really remember this, that, and the other. And it just didn't strike a lot of people as plausible.
Mm-hmm.
And I just,
or maybe not plausible, but like, you know, open and shut provable.
Exactly.
There was a
gap between that. And I don't know what happened, but when I paid attention to it, I was like, it doesn't strike me that this is a slam dunk in any way.
No.
And, you know, it was also, imagine if the case was against Barack Obama and it was ginned up at at Glenn Beck's dinner party, you know? I mean, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, literally she was drafted into this after telling a story, I suppose. But it's public record that it was George Conway and Molly Jong Fast's house or something similar to that. So look it up. Don't trust me on that. But, and I'm not saying that that's wrong. It doesn't change whether that's true or not. But I think if the situation was Glenn Beck's dinner party and the real anti-Obama types and somebody was there and yeah, I think that people would be a little more skeptical.
Can we go back to the Trump won't win thing?
It's not a declaration. It's just my suspicion. Yeah, if I had to bet, that's it.
But Moynihan, you sent a message earlier to our text thread. It was Harry Enten
on
CNN,
like
looking through the maps.
And
in particular, pointing to Arizona and Nevada and the fact that Trump is ahead in both of these states at the moment. These are states that, you know, Biden in 2020 like just barely eked out a win there. Like between those states and various other battleground states where Trump is doing better than anticipated.
He also points out Wisconsin, Michigan, and his written, and go watch it because I don't want to screw up what Harry said, but he basically said that that Biden would have to win like all of them, three, mm-hmm. and he's just getting crushed or not doing well in almost all of them now, and he would have to run
Georgia,
the tables.
Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin.
Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and in whoever the other host was, you know, when Harry's standing in front of the big screen. And by the way, I have to say, for America's political culture, the big screen people we have are fucking great.
They're good. Mm.
Harry Enten is so good.
He's good. John King is good.
John King is good. And,
especially when he's drunk.
And when Bin Laden is killed. That's and he's best. Like, he's gone.
Nothing but respect for my king.
For some reason, people don't really know about this. When Bin Laden was killed in 2011, I think, 11.
It was the White House Correspondents' Dinner, right?
I think so. And he was like out with his then wife, was Dana Bash. And was called back to announce this.
It's a big deal.
Absolutely juiced, and it's the best. And he's like Irish guy from Dorchester, Mass. It's like the best. But a lot of respect for him and Steve Kornacki too. But his what Harry says there.
Did you say Steve Kornacki too?
Steve? Yeah, no. Well, Steve Kornacki is at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah. Everyone who listens to this podcast knows that we revere we Steve Kornacki. We don't.
Yeah.
Frequent guest and our friend.
Yeah.
But what Harry says during that, he says, and this is the exact quote, he says, it's game over. If the map stays what it is now, it's game over for Biden. There's no way he can win.
Yeah, it's great. For me, it's just like, it's that if.
It's if, yeah. It is where we are now. If a lot of things can happen.
No, it's I mean, so early. It's so early, especially for these two.
Yeah.
And we have the, you know.
But this isn't Dukakis is what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it. On one hand, there is, Biden is historically unpopular. We've never seen it. Never have seen. Like, people think, oh, he's just as unpopular as Donald Trump was. He's not.
Yeah.
At this stage in Trump's presidency, there's a material difference between the two. It's
and,
a problem.
You know, and it's funny because the delusions that you got from the pro-Trump people during the Trump administration, they were so bad at it. And they were like the conservative C-listers of D.C. that came out of like, who are these? Like, oh, once I saw that guy once at some Leadership Institute conference or whatever you happen to walk by. And when you have the opposite of that with Biden, they're more sophisticated at it, but they're just as bad in the sense that all of the argument about this is that he has historically low approval ratings. So what is wrong? What's the matter with Kansas? How do they not realize that everything is great? And who is lying to them and tricking them into thinking that things aren't great, which is that false consciousness stuff does not play well with the American people.
And it also ends up being like this really weird circular a firing squad, browbeating the media.
Yeah.
Like you are using the wrong adjectives to describe Trump. You're platforming him. And you are not like,
this is James Comey and Hillary all over again. Yeah.
Emphasizing the stakes at every moment in every dispute and like weighing it. And we're going to see a lot of that. And that's is alienating people. I mean, you asked me earlier, like, why doesn't the bad Trump stuff stick to Trump? And it is the ultimate, I think, question of his role in American political life and popularity, which is that he's this kind of totem, something that people use to get back at an elite that they hate.
Correct.
And so when the elite responds by saying, you should hate him more, they're like, cool, that proves my point.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in that loop. And I think
if your parents tell you not to smoke, you start smoking.
So what explains you?
they told me to smoke, and I was like, oh, "That's good. That's a smart
it's
idea."
Like Dad's like, "Can you go give him some fucking Camelites?"
No. LSMFT, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. My dad smoked filterless Lucky Strikes.
Did he send you to the corn store to get some?
Correct. Yeah. And guess what I picked up when I was there? My own pack of cigarettes.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
No, but it is like, America's great. Stop the media. Stop telling your kids not to smoke. Stop telling them, everyone, like, you gotta hate
the asbestos
Trump.
Filter in them cigarettes. It's good.
And stop believing that. The new adjective. You're going to find it.
You're going to find it.
It's going to be like
the new case, the new adjective.
Unobtainium. Yeah. You're going to get it. Yeah. And it's really going to fucking work this time.
I mean, you would say that as a heteroxexk. I don't remember the word. What is the word? I've never used.
Hack ox, homodox. I don't know. No, it's they are in that loop and they are gearing themselves up for another season. This will be like the third or fourth political season of doing that.
Yeah.
And you're not persuading people, I don't think.
If people were to say, like, okay, you know, there's been a thing in the past couple of days because I don't still quite understand why people go through like one transcript and try to, what did they say here? If you were to go back into the archive of this podcast, you could probably string things together to make us the most anti-Trump podcast ever invented and one that is defending Trump all the time.
It's mostly Camille just saying MAGA.
Exactly. But the thing that if you wanted to sum it up, I would say, and I say this for all three of us, I think it's probably just, you know, all three of us kind of have this instinct, is what, and I think this is exactly where I stand now, is that the modern Republican Party and the modern conservative movement is a disgrace. And the media is a disgrace too. And because of the disgracefulness of the modern Republican Party, it has made that disgraceful media 1,000 times worse. 1,000 times worse. I mean, I lived through this at a place that had no credibility and squandered whatever credibility it had very quickly.
Which one, the Daily Beast or the
no, Vice not, not News? That. Yeah. No, did I work? I don't remember that one. The last one you said, I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, as I said one time in this podcast, that you would never have known for the year, first year of Joe Biden's presidency that he was president. It was all about QAnon and all about MAGA. And
Ultra
all MAGA. About
was
it Proud
Ultra
Boys.
MAGA. It was
Ultra MAGA. Yeah.
But it was like they couldn't get off.
Trump is Ultra MAGA Republicans. And the Ultra MAGA.
I love Ultra MAGA. I was just like, so we'll say MAGA, but just say Ultra? Like, that's great. Like, yes. Ooh.
And then say that it wants to like cut Social Security. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Now Donald Trump and the Ultra Super MAGA Transformer Republican Party conversion.
How many like Yeezys has he bought? Tonight.
Seven. Yeah. Already. Yeah.
Just cleaning up. You suggested that I make this investment, and it turns out it's a great idea.
Nobody said that.
No, Matt did. Matt did.
Why don't you
use some arbitrage in the market? And
yeah.
You're right, Matt.
Just
I should
the,
do
I
this.
Mean, Matt is another white man trying to bankrupt a black man. But the QAnon shit, that stuff, it's just so easy. The villains are so easy. There's no moral challenge to it at
God,
all.
You remember?
You don't have to take any
talk about
know
that anymore.
Anything.
When was the last time you heard anything about QAnon?
Well, that's Vice just
went
because,
out of business.
Yeah, Vice went out of business. Like, that's it.
They were hardly alone.
They were hardly alone. But I mean, they were the worst. But
I mean, do you remember? It was an ascendant cult. Like it was going to take over America.
HBO's in a documentary like
for...
We Found Q. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And it was some Asian kid. Seriously.
Eden Miles Chong?
Well, yes. Yes. Yeah. No, we don't call him by that name. We call him the Black People Fighting Twitter account. That's
what
all he does.
What is QAnon? The viral pro-Trump conspiracy theory. It was in the New York Times.
It was viral because they kept on making it go viral. It's literally
Kevin
like,
Roos.
But it's hilarious.
Wasn't Kevin on the podcast?
He was.
Once?
He was, yeah.
Kevin Cruz?
I wonder if he would admit that.
Connor Cruz. No, that thing was really funny because when the QAnon people, when like the Vice would be like, do you know how crazy these people are? They think JFK Jr. is coming back in Dallas. And I'm like, oh, is that what they said? Let me see. That's what they said. Yeah. Okay, great. Do you know what that tells me? Is that literally no one believes this. That there is a core group of mentally ill people that
and
you are
Roger
focusing
Stone.
On. Well, Roger Stone doesn't believe anything.
That's what I mean. I said
yeah.
And
yeah, yeah, and Roger Stone. Stone.
Yeah.
And that is like you're focusing on, there was a podcast I heard a long time ago, an Australian podcast, and it was this woman whose mother, Australian mother, this shows you how it has nothing to do with the fucking media in America. All these like people in Europe, There was a QAnon movement in Germany, and this woman's Australian mother got super into QAnon, and you're hearing this podcast, it was pretty interesting, and it's like, oh, wow, your mother's descending late in life into mental illness.
Oh, no. Mm.
And this was what she glommed onto.
Mm.
And it was probably from a fucking MSNBC article. She was like, QAnon, that sounds interesting. What's that?
Oh, wait, like, so you're probably, saying MSNBC was amplifying the whole QAnon conspiracy?
I don't think that's the verb that he used.
I would say that
was
probably
amplification.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to use that because it's already been used and I'm a heterodoxist.
Right.
I'm just heterodox.
Hasbara.
And I just like to Hasbara. And I like to just be on the opposite of every issue. Yeah. I'm a contrarian. I don't have any beliefs.
Contradox.
Yeah. Contracox. that's my new band, the Contracox.
Oh my God.
It just all comes back to one hand.
Oh gosh! Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, not
at all. It's a matter of pride.
We got like three. We get these emails from Substack that somebody subscribed, and it says like where they came from.
Mm.
And it says, hey, they click through from a recommendation from. You've seen this. And the last bunch were from Andrew Sullivan.
Oh
yeah. So
Andrew, you just heard
did he shout us
and
out?
You thought
recently?
About Andrew
correct?
Sullivan. Yes.
Yeah, I think Andrew would be very proud of me for saying that because he would say, "Darling, I do too."
Has he been back on since the Tide Pools episode?
I've been on his podcast twice since then.
I think we need an update.
Andrew.
I've reached out.
So
I was trying
fun.
To get him. I don't know what's
he's
going on.
He's just a fun guest. Yeah. I don't give a shit what he says or what. you think of him. He's just a fun guest who loves playing along and funny. Who
don't look at me when you say what you think of it. I love Andrew.
I didn't look at you.
I've said so.
I didn't look at you at all.
We didn't.
No,
we didn't. Like,
God,
say
somebody's
that
a little touchy.
I just want it to be known.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I know your Jamaican mother-in-law.
Well, no, don't talk about him to my mama.
Yeah.
My mama, she.
Andrew.
She's
the devil boy.
Yeah.
Tide pools.
Not far off. Not far off. I'm working on her. Yeah. I'm working on her.
Is she voting for Trump?
Who knows? Day to day, one doesn't know.
I saw that Harry Enten, after he had the Hispanics, he had black voters too.
Well, my mother ain't black.
And yeah, she is.
Jamaican.
She would probably die. Yeah.
How does she self-identify, Camille?
As my mom.
Yeah.
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 That's fair.
I'm Camille's mother.
She's never cared about that.
We're
other
Camille's,
stuff.
We identify as Camille's co-podcasters.
Yeah.
Is there anything else happening in the world, or should we just keep us at a tight 1:30?
Nah, you know, 1:30 is probably fine.
Probably good.
Come on, I got a flight out in the morning, and then I'll be back next week, which is crazy.
Isn't it better when you're here, Camille?
It's fun when I'm here.
Do you want to reflect on
but
that?
But you know what? Abstinence makes the heart grow fonder.
Is that what this expression is?
I think it is.
I don't think. I mean, maybe
that's what my wife told me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what all the women who won't fuck me tell me. Sorry.
That's not true.
Sorry if your kids are listening.
I'll be getting it. No. If your kids are listening,
did you just say, I be getting it?
I do.
I think you just said that's what he said.
I say that regularly. And it's one of the reasons I don't get laid. No, that's not true at all. I'm doing great.
Yeah. I'm cleaning up. But it's great. And I'm in my prime, which is the best part.
You're in your prime, and you've been with the same woman since you were 15?
16.
You've stayed at three different hotels while you were here?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah.
It was mostly in the same, like, first 3 hours when I got
here. It's as if you, like, showed up to a place, and it got soiled. And then you showed up to a new place, and
I had a series of weird situations.
Do you know how badly, I want to say something, be honest with you, and I want all of our listeners to, if you've made it this far, to use your imagination.
Yeah.
Matt just said, you know, he's there for, and then he has to leave.
Yeah.
And in my head, I had a scenario that I almost blurted out, and I realized that I cannot do a Chinese accent and say, you get out of here in a Chinese accent from all the places you've been on Canal Street in the past couple of days.
Yeah.
You cannot sleep here in a Chinese accent. Just use the AI to do it.
Are we going to have Moynihan racist Chinese AI?
Oh my God. I mean, you can just use my voice and have ChatGPT destroy my life. No,
my usual place was sold out, so I tried a different place.
Sold out?
A chain of hotels.
Of and rub and tug joints.
Just like so crazy. There were new forms of life growing in the shower. Yeah. And then I got to the other one, and it was teeming with drain flies.
Wow. Language.
It's just unbelievable craziness.
Yeah,
the guy shows up to my room from downstairs to take a look at the situation. He has gloves and a pesticide bottle in his hand. Mm-hmm. He's like, you want me to spray it? And I was like, no. Let me explain
I just
to
think
you. This isn't going to work.
Maybe if he's
leaving.
Dead,
I won't stay here.
Go to places that were
like
oriented around.
Like Matt Welch.
Like,
$79 a night. Come stay down here at Doug's.
The last time.
Doug's Road Motel. Bring your daughter.
Doug's Road Kill.
The last time we had a podcast that Matt wasn't on was because he was like, Barstow, what? Where the fuck is he?
That's $79 free parking.
Yeah,
he's giving you half a biscuit in the morning.
It's on the signs for HBO. Curb your enthusiasm.
We have internet. One internet connection that everyone shares.
The one thing I love about LA, and there's a lot of things I love about LA. There's a lot of crappy things, but a lot of things I love about it.
Yeah.
If you get off, I guess it's the 10 or the 405, and you get on to Sepulveda.
Yeah.
That long stretch of Sepulveda, which I guess goes north, towards the Reason office. It has all these old motels and hotels with all
awesome
the original
signs.
They're so crazy.
They're
it's like
beautiful.
A movie set, and it's so awesome. And the greatest thing about it is it still has everything, but there's a lot of them still have the sign free HBO.
Oh yeah.
Which I was like, that was a thing that people would be like, I'm really tired, but which one has HBO?
And at the time, we've got beds.
Yeah, it was like, but I'm sure at the time they said, which one has home box office? So I can watch Not Necessarily the News. Oh, man. You remember Not Necessarily the News?
That's wild.
The original John Stewart, I guess, right?
Oh, man.
Not Necessarily the News. All right.
Okay.
All right. That was fun.
Yeah. Well, it's been a good week so far.
Been a good week so far. Just
knocked a couple out real fast, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, and they're not all about the same subject.
No. I was also going to make a joke about
it's
you
uncomfortable
going back.
Not to be doing the equivalent of 40,000 words about one topic.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
About you going to the hotel and knocking a couple out. So you.
Yes, that's not what happened. My friend.
Careful for the flies, Camille.
Yeah.
Careful for the flies.
I'm fine now. I'm good now. And fuck y'all.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
We know of new methods of attack. The Trojan horse. The fifth.